Good morning, KBCW listeners. I'm John Burdick.
And I'm Amber Johnson. Welcome to the Community Campfire. John, I have to say, it's a little bit unsettling to sit across from you with that wig and that bushy beard. Is this a foreshadowing for the day we have ahead of us?
Yes, it is. Happy Halloween! This is the Community Campfire on Halloween, and make sure you come by. KPCW will be on Main Street today, yep, celebrating Halloween, so we want to see all your costumes. Main Street kicking off at 3 o'clock today. Amber, where is your costume?
You know, John, all will be revealed later today. I will give you one clue. Uh-huh. I'm something that Parkites love to hate.
Oh.
And I will be a sounding board for you to share your frustrations when you see me on Main Street today.
Yes, make sure we'll be in the middle of Main Street. You'll see a big KPCW tent.
Yep.
Amber, or not Amber, will be there. Some kind of crazy costume.
Absolutely.
I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, I previewed my costume to my kids, and my 21-year-old daughter asked me, why do you always have to be so obscure? Because obscure is never boring, John.
Obscure is never boring. I remember my first Halloween here in Park City at Star Bar. I made up my own Dr. Seuss character. What about you?
I always have, I mean, last week I was like a Canadian Scandal drone gate. I wore a drone on my head. So talking about obscure, always something creative.
Well, we have a great show for you today.
That's right. So this week, Andrea Buchanan brings us really cool stories about a mother and a son who created a tarot deck called The Sacred Web. And then I sat down with the legendary Dar Hendrickson to discuss his even more legendary haunted house that he ran for 20 years.
Yes, I do remember stumbling into that party at one point in my career here in Park City.
A lot of fun.
Uh-huh. And this week's musical sesh to end the show, Randy Moser is in studio, and you don't want to miss that. But first, take it away, Madeline.
The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Community Campfire are their own and do not reflect the views, opinions, or official policies of KPCW, its management, staff, or affiliated organizations. The content of this program is intended for informational and entertainment purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement by KPCW of any opinions, products, or services discussed during the show.
Hi, it's Andrea with Campfire Kids, Griffin, and Elodie. I had a chance to talk to Elodie about what it's like to be a fifth grader, pros and cons, all that good stuff. The pros and the cons are, well, the same.
Are you enjoying being a fifth grader? Tell me the pros and cons of being a fifth grader.
A pro is that I'm the oldest grade in the school. And a con is that, I don't know, it's like every time we go somewhere, a bunch of people are like watching us like, those are the fifth graders.
You got some swagger. You got some Riz. You're Rizzy. You're a Rizzy fifth grader.
Griffin, stop spitting on the table.
He cracked up so much he spit on the table. Okay, so.
Love it. Love it. You don't have to tell you that I went to my son. I remember when I first went to my son's kindergarten Halloween party, and it was, there was a parade, and all the cute little kindergarten kindergartners went first, and then the fifth graders went right after, and all the kindergartners were so cute and happy, and the fifth graders were all just these morose, like, sad creatures, like, dressed up crazy. So I just kind of laughed at the juxtaposition there. Now, for our first story, I've got to tell you, John, have you ever done a tarot card reading?
You mean, have I ever given one? No. No,
okay.
But back in college on Venice Beach or wherever it was dead on. No pun intended. What about you?
I haven't, but I have had my tea leaves read. And growing up, my mom owned an English tea room in Canada. And they had a fortune teller who had a pretty good following. In fact, some of her clients were so obsessed, they would tell their husbands they were going to therapy and they'd spend money on getting their tea leaves read. So, from Aziza. Her name was Aziza. Aziza, spoiler alert, her real name was Bernice.
Yeah, Tarot by Bernice. Doesn't really have the same
ring. Yeah, no, it doesn't. So I'm interested to hear about our next story.
All right, well, here it is.
If you went to the Park Silly Sunday Market this past summer, you may have run into Janie and James Brown, mother and son duo offering readings from their Sacred Web tarot deck. But this is not your average tarot deck, and they are not your average mother and son. This deck was inspired by James's personal journey of recovery following a serious head injury in 2017, which led him to use drawing as a form of therapy. Their collaborative experience, blending art, healing, and spiritual reflection, sparked the creation of the tarot deck and a language that is unique to them while being totally relatable. I love this deck. I have it on my nightstand, and I pull a card whenever I feel the urge. The artwork is so unique, and Janny's words and messages are profound. And while it's the season of ghosts and goblins, there's nothing spooky about Janny and James's sacred web tarot deck. Let's listen to their story. This is so great because I haven't seen Janny in a long time. This is mother-son work of art and passion, it feels like. So tell me how it happened, how it came together.
Super long story short. 2017, hit my head, lost my memory pretty consistently for 3 years. And over that time, as I like to say, they won't hire you if you can't write your name. So I couldn't really get a lot of opportunities. And I'd go to this cafe that was, and for some reason I remember, 0.76 miles away from my house every day for those 3 years. And I would just draw up to 6 to 8 hours, depending on the day. And I just kept doing it. And I wasn't exactly sure why. I just liked it. One Thanksgiving, my mom, who I'm legally allowed to call a tarot nerd, and I were discussing the idea of the death card. Which is pretty infamous because it's the death card.
Yeah, this is in tarot. So the death card is the, what is it usually the image when you see a death card?
It's the traditional image would be a skeleton on a horse.
yes,
like,
perfect.
You know, holding
Grim Reaper thing.
Grim Reaper, yeah. Basically. Mm-hmm. And it is a powerful card because it's not, it doesn't show up because someone's dying. It shows up because something is no longer supporting you or nourishing you. So it's an opportunity to ask, what isn't serving me and how can I release it? We actually changed the name of that card in our deck to release.
You know, I had experienced as close to death as possible. So I drew a wilting flower over a seed. And I sent it to my mom, and she's like, oh my God, we should make a tarot deck. And I'm like, that's awesome. I don't know what that means. So release, as Janny was saying, is the essence of the quote-unquote death card. Mm-hmm. It's with death is always life. They're a counterbalance. Yeah. And so that's sort of the approach we took with the entire deck, was there is no...
Wasn't the death card also like a death of something that no longer serves you, or a death of...
Which really highlighting your relationship to yourself. So mm-hmm. what's not serving you could be even a thought pattern mm-hmm. or a behavior. And when you pull this card, it's like a little mirror reflecting back to you. Oh, yeah, there is. If I can let something go, then there's more space for the thing that will nourish me to grow.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was the process? You were drawing and then you were writing. Is that how it worked? Had you ever done tarot before?
Not even a little bit. No. And the tarot nerd's been doing it for how long now? 2 decades?
Since the early 90s.
What do you mean, Janny? When you say you've been doing it just for yourself, or did
yes.
you like ever set up a shop within a window and the, you know?
I came to the tarot, actually, it was the Mother Peace tarot deck. It's a round deck, and it's really celebrated divine feminine energy. I just love the story, because that major story, and it's 22 cards, the 0 through 21, is the story of the soul. The 0 is the soul before it comes into a body, and in its perfect wholeness, and then the journey begins. So the first card shows up and says, okay, here you are. You have all the gifts you need to create a life of meaning and purpose and beauty. And how are you going to do it? With the gifts of earth and water and fire and air. So that's the elemental story that I also fell in love with, because it's a language that's threaded through so many wisdom traditions. Yoga through the chakra system, earth, water, fire, air, astrology, the 4 signs, earth, water, fire, air. And I wanted to expand how that language is essential to tarot. I've never seen yoga pulled into the tarot, and that was exciting for me, because the tarot came first, but then I really studied yoga for many decades and taught for a couple decades. Mm-hmm. So
effectively, I drew 120 different images. So, like, if you open the deck, you see the 0, which is this great white pyramid, and there's a little rabbit hopping in the middle of it, right?
On a luminous bridge.
And when I drew this, I was thinking of Peter Rabbit. I did not know what this would be. There's a 10 of cups, or water. Which one do we do? Water or cups? I don't even know.
It's your card list.
And I was thinking of Free Willy. So I would say a lot of these cards have their own personal narrative for my just day-to-day existence.
Right.
And Gianni is the one who terrified them and put them in a orderly context that made a lot more sense than a strange kid drawing a bunch of animals.
Okay, he showed you a drawing. He's had this horrible accident. He can't read or write. But now he's starting to draw. And then you see a drawing and you're like, that could be a tarot deck. How did you even think that? A mother's desperation to give her son something to do? Or was it...
I've never phrased it like that.
No, but I mean, like, I can, as a mother and of a son, I can imagine how terrifying that was for everyone, you know. And you want to make everything better and make it right and let's help. And you were seeing this beautiful way of expression, you know. So it went from that to tarot how?
Well, I mean, to me, it's kind of interesting because for him to have drawn the image for that he called the death card, it was perfect. And I just thought, there's a seed here of something that we can explore. And
then did you give him direction after that? Or did he? No.
Not
I mean, I'm seeing, I watched him draw himself back to himself. Mm. And the power of art to heal, I was witnessing it. And I feel like that energy is, I think tarot is here to help us heal as well. It's a healing modality. Mm-hmm. And there's so much healing that's gone into this deck because of where it came from. That being said, like, I did sit with about 120 plus images, and I remember, I think we have the suit of water. And I text James because, you know, so we have this really lovely balance of left and right brain and feminine, masculine. Mm-hmm. The yin-yang is a huge part of this deck, the holding the space for the light and honoring the dark. They exist together.
The biggest summary that we've always agreed upon, and it might sound a little pretentious, is like, when we did this, we didn't even think we'd get published. We just made this. Mm-hmm. And the fundamental idea behind this was, I wish I had this kind of assistance or ability to get a different perspective on some of the things I was feeling when I was really struggling, when I was arguing with a bush about photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm. Who won that argument?
The bush. The bush did. A single person out there manages to find this deck or us and can just learn a little bit more about self-love, self-healing, then we did our job. This feels a lot more like a service than a choice. We've stayed away from any concept of divination or traditionalism. Like
to think of working with the tarot as a tool for presence, not prediction. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a meditative tool. I use it for journaling. I pull a card and I'll take, each of the cards comes with a mantra, a sacred word, and a longer affirmation. So you actually don't even need to know tarot to work with this deck. And then I'll take those words and I'll use those and jump off for journaling. So
You know, it's not every person that you meet that's going to have a deck in their house and pull a card, and it's like a way to think about how the day is going to unfold or what's on your mind, or give you a different thought of something that you wouldn't have thought of had you not pulled that.
And if anything, all we provide is a structure that's imaginary.
It's you looking at an image, and we're talking about art as therapy, right? So one of the things about, actually we took the names off the cards in order to remove really bias, so you can just be there with this image and start to tune in and tune up your intuition, because it's a gift that we're all born with.
Mm-hmm.
We see it with our kids, you know, they're so tied to it. And then, you know, I'm a former teacher, and never once did I say to one of my kids, wow, that was so intuitive. Let's go work on that. Who's helping you flex that muscle? And so any deck of cards, oracle, angel cards, tarot cards, are these opportunities for you to learn how to trust your intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you do that, the more it shows up. And it's right. It centers you. Right. And to step into your own magic, your own knowing.
Mm-hmm. So how do you guys, do you do readings for people?
All the time.
Where?
So we had a booth at Park Silly Market.
Oh, you did?
We did. I think we did 9 Sundays.
Nice.
And
it was fun.
It was wild.
Really?
We were just doing reading after reading by the end.
We didn't expect that to be sort of the focus. You know, our little booth says tarot, art, and affirmations. So if you stop by, you would get a free affirmation.
Power word.
James calls them power words.
I love that. Power word.
Power words. Mm-hmm. Or you could do like a little a vibe check. That's a single card reading or a three card reading, which it's magical when we use it on our own and when people work with it. And we had to start bringing the boxes of Kleenex, and you just don't know who's going to show up. But
were people open and wanting to, like, yes, not afraid?
But no. You know, you don't know anything until after the reading, and then they would share, and then you're just like, oh my goodness. I think tarot is a soul story. Then every soul who shows up to this deck has to feel welcome.
Mm-hmm.
So we did change some of the language. Again, invite people to tune into their own truth, mm-hmm, and their own knowing. It's pretty incredible.
So this is the entire method for at least my side, and I believe a lot of Janie's side, is you are the author here.
Yes.
So you shuffle, you pick.
I love this so much, by the way. I love picking cards.
And, you know, we love getting all the questions, but at the end of the day.
So I just flipped open this card. I've never seen this one. It's a koala, beautiful koala hanging on a branch, like a tree, climbing up a tree. Koala. There's a beautiful, like, kind of flower coming up from its hand. Maybe it's what it eats. I don't know. And then these lovely little.
They're wands.
Wands.
So again, just to sort of reiterate, there's a koala holding basically a stick of fire, and then there's six sticks of fire below it, and the sacred word is perseverance.
Me so too. My vibe check is persevere. And
it's persevere, and the longer affirmation is it takes perseverance to love authentically and to live with compassion for all beings.
Wow.
It's really, really, it is a practice, for sure.
It's a practice, yeah.
And apparently you're really good at it.
Well, thank you. I'm sure working on it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I love everybody, but, you know, there's a couple out there that are on my
call it a practice.
Beep list.
Sometimes we switch between love and mercy. If we can't give love, we can try and give mercy.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, this has been amazing.
Thank you.
It's called The Sacred Web, Tarot Deck and Guidebook.
Yeah.
And I want to see you guys all over town.
We want to be as big a part of this community as we're allowed to.
Using art for healing in such a cool way. That really was a great
story. That was a good story.
Yeah, thanks to Andrea, Janie, and James. John, for our next story, I sat down with Park City's Dar Hendrickson to talk about his legendary full contact haunted house that ran for more than two decades. And you said you had the privilege of checking it out.
Oh, yeah, the tiki bar was legendary in the backyard. I mean, it was quite the thing. And he still kind of set some stuff up in his driveway, but doesn't go full board now.
Oh, my gosh.
So Jack got to sit in the electric chair 2 years ago, I think.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, it's going to be legendary. Kids called it the Spook Alley. Grown-ups called it Adult Happy Hour, and both were correct. So buckle up for this hair-raising trip down memory lane. Give me your name and your title.
Dwayne Dar Hendrickson, and my title is Stay Out of Trouble.
Actually, I don't believe that. We're already off to a bad start.
Okay.
Okay, this is Amber, and let's back up. Meet occasional troublemaker Dar Hendrickson, a beloved Park City ski and snowboard coach who became a local legend for something far spookier. Think electric chairs, a dash of childhood terror, and enough neighborhood lore to keep kids whispering his name for years. Yes, Evil Owen, I'm talking about you. He's married to the local news hour's Leslie Thatcher, but Dar's Halloween antics have earned their own level of fame. A few years ago, when I mentioned my husband's obsession with growing the Great Pumpkin, Leslie told me about the Spook Alley Dar ran for 20 years, and I've been dying to hear the tales of the man behind the myth ever since. So buckle up for a hair-raising trip down memory lane.
It started, our daughter was basically 1 year old, a little over 1 year old. We had a smaller home, and we thought to ourselves we could never really entertain at the holidays, being Christmas or Thanksgiving. And so we decided to just do a couple of spooky things in the front yard, and the kids could go trick-or-treating. They went with their parents. And so it just kind of started that way, and every year I became a little more obsessed. And then when we moved to Prospector, I was beyond obsessed.
Define obsessed.
Spending well over 100 hours making a spook house, and who knows my father-in-law used to talk about. He'd ask for years, "You still got that big bowl of candy?" I'd go, "Bill, that was all gone that night. No way. You still have to have it." And Bill just seemed to think that I kept all that candy forever, but it would go, because we'd have a lot of kids come through. I don't know how many hundreds. And in the backyard were adult beverages, and that brought its own spookiness or hauntedness or whatever you want to call it. It grew into such that when you walked into the yard, it was full frontal assault. You had to crawl through an opening. There were slides in there. There were coffins. There were rooms. There were lights. There was crawling out of a space to get, and it was consumptive, not just my time, but kids loved to hang out in there and play and spook, and parents loved to be in the backyard, and we had oodles of trick-or-treaters and, you know, a storage unit full of stuff, and I've gotten rid of a lot of that.
Yeah, so tell me about some of the stuff then.
Well, I used to make stuff. I made zombie Abe Lincolns. I made Draculas. I made ovens that your head can fit in. I still have some of it. Electric chairs.
Side note, those electric chairs actually produced a shock.
Signs, all kinds of stuff.
What were some of your signs? What kind of stuff did you see?
Oh, there was one that just, it said, besides Spook Alley, but it just shows like a haunted, spooky looking stuff and enticing. I mean, I have a picture here of our neighbor that was in Evil Owen. Mother put him in this little area that Evil Owen was in, and people would walk by and go, "There's a kid. That's a kid. That's a live kid in that thing."
Like, how old was he?
She was. She's probably like one.
And what does she think of being put in that thing?
She hates the picture still. She's our neighbor. She's a couple years out of high school, but she still comes, and I go, "Want to see the picture?" "No, I hate that." And you know, there's still kids talk about it. They used to love to play in it. And they go, "Oh, you are the one. I remember your Halloween. So.
Yeah. What were some of your favorite things then, in addition to what you told me? So some of the stuff you built coffins then?
I built stuff, yeah.
Yeah, like, well, tell me the process of, like, how would these ideas come to you then, this obsession?
You know, when you're obsessed with stuff, you just always see something and think it would be fun. And, you know, used to go to California. Our in-laws lived near a giant Halloween store, so I would always buy new costumes. Not so much costumes, but decorations, skulls, hanging guys, you name it, spiders, clowns. Within reason, you name it, I had it.
Within reason. I don't know if this sounds reasonable. Yeah. So you said you had to rent a storage unit for a lot of this then, or?
There's still a few things in the storage unit, yep.
So this was just for Halloween you did this?
Well,
Halloween night, or would you have stuff in your yard?
It was just really Halloween night.
Okay.
It would, and then for the most part, the next day or two, it was all taken down and put away. But it would take me a month sometimes to start setting it up.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
So what did you get out of it? What was your motivation for doing this?
Seeing the joy it brought people year after year after year. I mean, and then because every year it got bigger till our last one. And then we might have had a few little things after, but it just never was. The height was probably, daughter was in high school age, so.
That was how many years ago?
15.
15 years
We did
ago.
It a couple years after, but it was it started tapering down after that.
Yeah.
It kind of started because I start winning Halloween costume contests. They used, at the club, they used to have you could get a season pass. Mm-hmm. And even though I had one, winning anything is always fun for me. So it started just with individual Halloween costumes that morphed into this, or what it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
My husband's the same way. You can't get to this level of obsession unless you have a competitive edge. So.
Probably there's truth to that. I hate to probably agree with you. Just never enough. Just never enough.
I mean, people still talk about it. When people come up to you, like, what kind of things do they remember the best then that they enjoyed?
I think a lot of people remember the bar in the backyard. That's the adults. And the kids remember just particular things. Kids liked the perch you could sit on, or being in the coffin or just being part of it, running around inside of a spook house that really didn't make any sense because it was, I made a sign, one way in, no way out, you know. And just the joy that it brought people. That was really it.
What'd your wife think of it?
She was very accepting of it. It just became part of what we did. Yeah. It was just part of what we did for a number of years. And the last one we did was on a Saturday night. And the next one, next Halloween, happened to be on a Monday. And we just said we were done on that after 20 years and done on a Saturday night. And that was it. So we just said, and it was perfect. It was perfect.
Amber here. Freud would be proud of Campfire Kids Beau and Luke. Forget dream journals. Their REM cycle is basically Willy Wonka's factory tour.
So what are some things that kids your age care about that grown-ups don't really care about?
Candy.
You think a lot about candy?
I dream candy.
It is time for the Skinny on Sports, and although Coach Skinner is on vacation, we're going to listen to high school sports intern Madeline Jaquit's Skinny on Sports for this week.
And welcome to the spooky edition of the Skinny on Sports. The spooky part is that Bill's not in the studio. It's Mitch here, joined with the lovely Madeline Jaquit. Madeline, happy Halloween, and tell us what's going on in the world of high school sports.
All right, happy Halloween, 10:31. All right, starting with volleyball. Park City High School girls had a tough go at state. They lost 0-3 against Desert Hills on Monday and then 0-2 against Snow Canyon on Tuesday. But they did win against Timpanogos last week, so they did have a win in the world of states.
Nice.
Next is Wasatch Girls Volleyball. Last Friday, they beat Hillcrest but lost to Pleasant Grove 0-3 this Wednesday in the second round of playoffs. North Summit had a clean sweep this weekend. They beat South Summit 3-0, then North Sevier 3-0, then beat Draper APA 3-0 on Friday, then beat Enterprise 3-1 on Saturday, making them the 2A state champs.
Wow, what a run there from North Summit, huh?
All right, cross country. Park City girls cross country are the 4A state champions, and Tatum Flock, a sophomore, placed second overall. Then for football, North Summit, South Summit, and Park City all had a bye last week, but they're all playing games tonight. North Summit versus Millard at 4 p.m., South Summit versus American Leadership Academy at 2 p.m., Park City versus Skyview at 4 p.m., and then last Friday, Wasatch lost to Timpview 15-40, so they are out of the playoffs.
Well, and I just want to remind listeners, you can tune in tonight at 4 p.m. to listen to the live broadcast of the Park City High School Miners football game here for the playoffs.
Yes, please tune in. Then for hockey, Park City White versus Sky Canyon lost Monday 1-10, but Park City Red versus Harriman won 8-1 on Wednesday. Last but certainly not least, flag football. Park City Red played Monday versus Bingham and went overtime 20-20, but the final score 20-26. Bingham took the title, but Park City White beat Lone Peak on Wednesday 36-0. Their next game is against Timpview, and we will have those results for you next week.
And for people that are not familiar with the red and white teams, can you kind of explain it to them?
Yeah, so I am actually on the Park City Red team. It is the older team, yet we are the worst team. So that is for juniors and seniors. Then PC White is some eighth graders, freshmen, and sophomore.
Okay, so kind of like a junior varsity and varsity situation.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
Cool. Gotcha.
All right, that's it. Back to you guys.
Welcome back to the Community Campfire. This is Amber Johnson here with
John Burdick.
And we're talking all things Halloween fun going on today. And of course, one of the most fun things going down is Halloween on Main Street today. We will be there from 3 to 6 p.m. John, any guesstimates about what costumes
going
to be seen today?
Now, what are the big movies that have been out that you get a rash
of?
Well,
I think
film.
Your dress is one of them, aren't you?
Yes, my son has a slight obsession with one of the movies that came out this summer. So come out and see us, and the mystery will be revealed on your mystery costume.
Yeah,
my mystery costume.
We'll be handing out just slap bracelets, candy, stickers, KPCW stickers for the adults. So yeah, swing by and come see us. We'll be in front of the cabin.
All right, and also going on, we have have, what's going on at the Heber and Midway area? What do they do?
You know, I don't know tonight. Last weekend, I was at the Heber Halloween Fest. And so there was just shut down the street in Heber and just had a big carnival.
I heard it was crazy.
It was madness. And it was just so much fun. It's fun to see how much it's grown over the years. So, and yeah, speaking of madness, we've also got a fun event tomorrow.
Yes,
as well.
Tomorrow. Tomorrow is Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. And it is a tradition that is celebrated in Mexico and many parts of Latin America. And here in Park City, the Park City Summit County Arts Council is having a ofrenda for the community. If you don't know what an ofrenda is, it's where they take and honor members of loved ones that have passed away. It's free. It's open to the public. You can bring your photos, your memorabilia. Yeah. There will be some food. There'll be tamales. There'll be face painting, you know, those dead masks.
I love those. Yep. The face painting.
And then pan a muerto, de muerto. Crafts. Also, they have the little sugar skulls, so they'll be able to make that. And Park City, of course, is located there over at the PC local artist collective right over off of Kearns Boulevard. So jump on our website. We have a story on our calendar. It's all about that.
That's awesome. Well, we've also got some fun facts today. As I've mentioned, my husband's a giant pumpkin grower. His biggest was 1,300 pounds, which is absolutely monstrous. But there was a new world record set this year by two brothers in England.
Uh-huh.
Any guesses on how much it weighed?
Okay, so your husband's was 1,300
yeah,
pounds?
Yeah, and it was huge.
Okay, so I would say, how about 2,600 pounds?
22,819 pounds.
Oof, with blew him out of the
water.
With
a circumference of over 21 feet. I mean, it just blows me away. I mean, these guys and women are literally obsessed. So pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Do you like candy corn? What's your thing on candy corn?
Yeah, I'm indifferent to candy corn. I'll eat if it's there, but I don't like it.
So a neighbor of ours dropped off a Jell-O shot combination that looks exactly like a piece of candy corn.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Tastes just like it, too. It was amazing.
That's awesome.
What other staples are in the Halloween?
Well, speaking of candy corn, there was chicken feed, I've heard. The Halloween staple we love to argue about started as actual barnyard cuisine.
Ooh.
They cooked up these little tricolored kernels in 1800s, and they proudly called them chicken feed because nothing says yum like sharing a snack name with your local poultry. So luckily, everyone realized candy corn was a tad more appetizing and the rebrand stuck.
You know I love my fun facts, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is one I learned from one of our KPCW volunteer DJs the other night. He was playing Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Okay.
And did you know that Vincent Price was offered either $20,000 or a percentage of the sale of Michael Jackson's Thriller album? And what do you think he did?
I hope that he did a percentage of sales.
He did not.
Oh,
he took
no.
the money and ran. Vincent Price, of course, the voice, classic voice on the Thriller album. Well, we're gonna get into the campfire music session yet, but I've got some more fun facts. $13.1 billion will be spent this year on Halloween.
I believe
$4.3 billion on costumes and $3.9 billion on candy.
Man.
That is amazing to me.
Yeah. I think I officially have more Halloween decorations than Christmas decorations, which is saying something.
Do you have a shed that you keep them in?
No, but it's our entire storage area downstairs is pretty much Halloween, so I love it. I mean, it's our Super Bowl in our family. Halloween is our Super Bowl.
And then we'll be right back with Randy Moser, our campfire musical sesh for today's Halloween edition of The Community Campfire. Thanks for listening.
And welcome to the Campfire Musical Sesh. I'm joined in the studio by my co-host, John Burdick. Hi, John.
Hello, Mitch.
And in studio today, we have Randy Moser. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your background as a musician.
I've been playing locally since high school, 25 years.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I'm 45, so whatever that makes.
Math.
That's some math. But yeah, I've been playing since 14 or 15.
What's your style? What do people come to expect when they see a Randy Moser show?
I'm a singer-songwriter for sure, but growing up, I played in punk bands or emo bands, so I had the eyeliner and...
I was going to say, did you go full black?
Yeah, I loved it. And we wore girls' jeans before they came up with skinny jeans back in the day. And then I got married. I have four kids at home.
Congratulations.
Yeah, they're awesome too. I love them. And so I missed it. I missed playing music. So a little bit before COVID or so, I was always participating in the songwriter groups. I had groups in Park City and they have groups down in Salt Lake. Then I started going around, hitting the restaurants and places anywhere I could play.
There's a really vibrant music scene here and there's a lot of space for people to go out and play. So I'm glad you're a part of it.
Yeah, for sure.
And you play the guitar. Do you play any other instruments?
No, I don't. Not very well. No, I can play anything with strings, basically.
Did you grow up here in Utah?
Yeah, I grew up in Camas.
Shout out to Camas.
Yeah, my dad was the principal at the high school there. And I mean, we moved up when I was 4 from Kearns and been there pretty much ever since. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Tell me about your upbringing in music. What got you into playing music? Is there any inspiration that kind of started there? Was it, you know, a family figure or maybe just like one artist that really hit for you?
I like all kinds of music. I mean, it's kind of like pizza. I mean, recently I've switched over to country. Yes, I have gone country. And the story behind that, so before I played a lot of pop rock or punk and emo playing. As I went out to the restaurants and things, I was playing songs, all the indie artists and stuff that I play. Nobody really knew who they were. And I wasn't making any money. On a joke, I played a Garth Brooks song and a guy came up and gave me a 20 and I was like, okay.
There's something here.
Yeah. So I guess I'll pivot.
That brings up a pretty good discussion about country right now. It's more popular than ever right now. And so you're seeing this trend. Why do you think that is? And, you know, why did you make that shift besides the money as well? There's got to be some level of enjoyment.
Yeah. I mean, growing up, country was everywhere. I mean, you get on the school bus, it was George Strait. Yeah, you go everywhere. Like 2015s or 2010s, I joined a songwriter group called the Nashville Songwriters Association. They call it NSAI. And they teach about songwriting there. And it's different songwriting style. It's just completely different in that you just say what you mean. There's no metaphor, right? But that's the criticism with country music too, is it's a lot of bad bumper sticker slogans kind of thing.
Yeah.
Why is it popular today? I don't know. It's got me stumped as well.
It has definitely become more on the scene. I mean, Beyonce gets all those Grammys for doing the country thing.
Yeah.
You've got artists that are crossing over all the time. So, and you're crossing over from emo to country. So you're right there with it.
Right. Like, I mean, if you want to listen to guitar music, where do you go? And I think that's a lot of it for me. What is there in that sense? So that, I mean, folk has always been something I grew up on. I mean, Dylan and everything else. For
yeah.
Sure.
I'm curious how your background kind of being in like a pop punk emo sense also translated into these songwriter sessions. What would you say your songwriting process looks like?
My songwriting is good, but not great is where it's at. That was, I think, what I learned from the songwriting sessions. It takes a lot of practice. And so like your first idea isn't your best idea, which was something that was really interesting to me. When you come from the punk, you're just lucky to have words. So you have a notepad, whatever you write down first, you know, there's not a lot of editing. Mm-hmm. It is a lot of metaphors. If you listen to a song, you know, you're like, oh, what does it mean? And I think that was the big learning point for me is like, I'd be like, hey, what do you think this means? I'm like, I have no idea what you're saying. And so like the country, like that's the hard part for me. And it's a struggle is trying to have a clear message and say what you mean, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a topic, you write at the top of the paper, and this is the topic that I'm going to have. And you follow through all the way through instead of, you know, moon and June and being happy that you have a rhyme.
Can you describe that for the listeners of what is the songwriting session?
Like a co-write. They're humbling. So, I mean, you're performing a different role depending on what you're in there. So oftentimes I find myself in more of a cheerleader position, just making sure that the person feels comfortable and helping them express their views. But then there's also times when you're in the driver's seat for sure. Usually like a songwriting session, you'll come in with 4 or 5 ideas, you know, both of you, and you'll be comfortable in sharing them. If the person's cool, you kind of work out how the arrangement's going to be. I've written with a lot of local artists here. It's fun. It's speed dating for sure. There are people that you go in, you meet with, and you click immediately, and it's amazing, and you have a lot of the same shorthand. And there's other people you just don't click with, and you're like, I don't know if I want to do that again.
Fair enough. Like you're going to find your right match. Mm-hmm. But we would love to hear some of the music that you've written. What are you going to start off and play for us for our campfire musical sesh?
I have a song, it's about new romances, I guess, after people have been broken up with. So kind of like divorcee kind of thing.
What's the name of that one?
Last First Kiss.
Last First Kiss right here on the community campfire.
I never thought I'd love again. I thought that's over before I give my heart again. I expect no full disclosure. I want to have you here by me, but I don't need to be rescued. So let's set the terms now. You agree, I'm ready to get closer. And I will share, as I will share my last first kiss with you. And I will share, as I will share my last first kiss with you. I don't know where to begin, so let's take this very slowly. And dancing in the kitchen with my best friend is the best part of the morning. And let go of our past mistakes, and just know that I am growing. And if I laugh or lecture, let you in, let your opinion inform me. And I will share, I will share my last first kiss with you. I will share, I will share my last first kiss with you. I won't share, I'll bet my friend, no, I won't have any other. So tell me straight, don't lie, bottle up or high, leave no secrets to discover. Don't stand around asking what to do. Please step in and start helping. If this is something you can do, let's take our happy ending. And I will share, yes, I will share my last first kiss with you. I will share, yes, I will share my last first kiss with you.
Wow, thank you.
Thank you, man. That was really pretty.
Ah, love it. Thanks.
So tell us a little bit about your performing here in Park City. Is there any show that stands out to you as like something that was really fun or something that was really unique?
I've played in a lot of unique situations. Earlier on, we got to play with a lot of fun bands when I was in the emo bands or the pop bands. Played with Gnarly Neon Trees, a very young Paramore. That was cool. I mean, there's shows where you play into people's backsides, right? And you're in the corner and everybody's talking and you're just wallpaper, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are some of the ones. The fun part of Park City is you always see cool people come through. Mm-hmm. So you're always seeing somebody famous, which is always fun to take home to the wife.
If you wanted to put together a song group, who would be your dream band that you would be playing together with?
Jason Isbell, I mean, he's my favorite songwriter and it shows, right? So I'm copying him. And Chris Stapleton, I mean, yeah, and I'm stealing from him as much as I can or when I can.
Two phenomenal songwriters and musicians right there. And also kind of crossing into that country vibe too. Mm-hmm. So did you ever go away from Park City?
I've lived in Kearns for 4 years, and then I lived in Camas 4 or 5 years. But I stopped playing. People would have remembered me from like 2003 to maybe 2015.
And is there a dream location that you would play at? Where would you love to see?
We did a show once in Ohio, Oskaloosa, Ohio. Oh, college town in the middle of nowhere.
Big ticket.
It was amazing. We paid us $500, and we drove all the way there.
Nice.
So the pay for gas.
Yeah, I think any stage is a happy place for me.
What are you working on right now?
keep trying to tell myself that a writer writes, and I usually try and record an album every year. I missed last year, and so I feel awful, and it's been nagging on me. So, but that's what I've been doing. I play locally, so 2 to 3 nights at Sterling Steakhouse. It's an awesome place, so come on in to play. And once in a while at Maxwell's, they'll have me in there. I don't have any set dates, but they call me usually on Monday, and I show up.
Where do people find you on the web, the albums that you do have out?
Find me on Spotify, and you can also find me on Bandcamp. So just look up Randy Moser. If you want to email me, you just reach out, randyjmoser@yahoo.com. The recordings, yeah, I bought a Chinese mic for $40 off eBay, and I had a laptop, and so don't judge.
Well, we have some microphones here that's going to make you sound really good.
Yeah, we're going to get one more song to end the show today. What do you want to play for us?
The next song is called Heartbreaker. It's a song I wrote for my kids, so I tend to be a bit of a helicopter parent, and I think the lesson I was trying to teach myself is just to let them go out and do their thing. And they figure it out on their own, usually better than I can tell them.
Thank you so much for being here on the Community Campfire.
Awesome, guys.
Well, you are my heartbreak. You go on by. You're capable. You won't be fooled by anyone. And if you think that you couldn't be all of that, when you say, when you say, so there were things I wouldn't change it and tame you at all. When you call, I came to love you most of all. I'm more scared each day, dear. Try to keep you from it all. And if you ask me, and you asked me, if there were things that I would change, well, I would change. Because I'd change. Stay out. When you ask me, and you ask me, if there were things that I would change, well, of course I'd change. I'd stay out of the way. 'Cause I would stay, I would stay out of the way.
Hi, it's Andrea again with Campfire Kids, Elodie and Griffin. I asked them about what they would do if they won the lottery. Griffin's answer was about 20 minutes long, and it had a lot to do with Bugattis and buying up mansions. Elodie's answer to what she would do with $1 million was much different.
What would you do with the money if you won the lottery? And do you know what the lottery is?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what's the prize first?
Let's say it's $1 million.
Okay, I wouldn't want to spend it all. Like, I wouldn't want to spend it all because I would be like, I'd want to give the money away. And we're also having a school fundraiser right now. So I would want to do that.
You'd give it all to your school?
Not all of it, but I would give it out to like charities and stuff. Mm-hmm. And
you're totally different than what I said.
What did you say?
Mine was $100 million.
there's
so
hope.
Sweet.
All right. Well, that's a wrap on today's show. If you missed any part of it, you want to listen to some of the feature stories of artists, go online to kpcw.org under the shows tab, Community Campfire.
And subscribe to the Community Campfire podcast so you never miss an episode. Find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.
And if you have a great idea for a campfire story or a band we should feature, send us an email at campfire@kpcw.org.
Now, John, in addition to Halloween, today our office manager reminded us that it is National Knock Knock Joke Day. Hit
yes!
us up.
Hit I get
us
to
up,
end
John.
With some knock knock jokes. Knock knock.
Who's there?
Ooze.
Ooze who?
Ooze that monster over there.
No.
Knock knock.
Who's there?
Ice cream.
Ice cream who?
Ice cream every time I see a ghost.